and welcome to Lowell Quarter One 2018 results. My name is Amelia, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call. If at any point you require assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected to an operator. I am now handing you over to your host, John Trott, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Amelia, and a very good morning, everyone. My name is John Trott, and I'm the Head of Investor Relations of Garfunkel Lux Holdco II. Perhaps a new voice for today to some of you on the call, while also a seasoned voice for those who joined us for accounting teaching session last year. Nevertheless, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to you all as you join us for a review of our Q1 2018 interim results. It is just 5 weeks since we spoke to discuss our full year 2017 results, and for this reason, our intention today is to keep things deliberately brief. Joining me today are James Cornell, our Group CEO, and Colin Storrer, our Group CFO. Our presentation is via webcast, with both the presentation we'll talk through and the accompanying interim financial statements being available to download at any time from our new corporate website, www.lowell.com. A website now easier to pronounce and one that should be easier for you as investors to use. Turning now to the presentation and the key housekeeping points on slide three. Although dry as an opening, it remains important for us to provide appropriate context at the outset. On March 20th, 2018, we closed the acquisition of the carve-out business from Intrum. Given the proximity of closing to the end of the quarter, we have consolidated the carve-out business into our GHE2 results as of March 31st, 2018. As such, this presentation principally reports the year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter performance of the U.K. and DACH businesses. We refer to this as the extant group. We also provide pro forma views where we feel this will enhance investors' understanding of the enlarged group. With regards to the accompanying interim financial statements, the consolidated statement of financial position reflects the acquisition of the carve-out business, including the provisional purchase price allocation, whereas the consolidated statement of comprehensive income does not reflect any contribution from the carve-out business, given the consolidation into the GHE2 results on the final day of the quarter. As a result of the adoption of IFRS 9 on January 1st, 2018, an adjustment has been made to present net portfolio write-up within total income for the 3 months to the end of March 2017. Previously, net portfolio write-up was presented within revenue and operating expenses. One other small housekeeping point to better align our statutory disclosure and help aid typical cost to collect and gross profit analysis. As such, we have reclassified appropriate staff costs under collection activity costs, removing them from other expenses, with no effect to the overall position of the consolidated statement of comprehensive income as historically reported. Added to this, within the appendix of the presentation, we also provide a quarterly view of this restatement between the collection activity costs and other expenses to aid your analysis.
Thanks, John. You covered off the housekeeping with far greater aplomb than I normally do. And thank you to everyone for joining us so soon after our full year 2017 results. When we spoke just over a month ago, actually, we viewed the coming year with both confidence and positivity. And 5 weeks later, nothing has changed. Our extant Q1 results are in line with our expectations, and we're already seeing the fruits of our strategic investment in the Nordic region. The group, including our Nordic acquisition, successfully invested £261 million in the last 6 months, of which £97 million was in Q1. We've nevertheless held leverage flat, as we guided at year-end, at 5.2 times. And more importantly, with this expenditure, we've also more than covered our average replacement rate of £228 million, which is the annualised average replacement rate, in the last 6 months alone. Now, such pronounced investment success gives rise to short-term differences between quarter-on-quarter and year-on-year growth rates. This is a dynamic we expected, it's a dynamic we've seen before, and it arises as costs are more front-loaded than collections. Quarter-on-quarter earnings volatility is always more pronounced when a business is more debt purchase centric. although the movements can be explained with context, as we will do today. In due course, given the returns we consistently achieve, our recent purchasing success will move through the cost peak, and with asset liquidation having built, will throw off significant incremental EBITDA. The performance of our Nordic division further underscores the strategic rationale behind the acquisition. The integration is progressing well, and meaningful capital has already been deployed. Recent Nordic purchasing success will in due course facilitate further earnings growth, not only in terms of the region, but also the wider group. Looking forward, the Nordic debt purchase pipeline looks strong. Having access to the Nordics and being the market-leading presence in Nordic financial services means the group has more flexibility than ever before as to geographical capital allocation, providing us with a dynamic optionality as to how best to achieve growth and return maximisation. Our confidence in our business model, our trajectory, and our recent strategic decisions is mirrored by the confidence of others. Today, we're also pleased to announce that a further 6 new banks have agreed to join our revolving credit facility, and a further 3 members of our existing syndicate have increased their participation. As a result, our available facility subject to ERC has increased to some €455 million. This development increases our funding flexibility, provides access to funding at a cheaper coupon than could otherwise be achieved in the high yield space, and ultimately puts us in a really strong place given the strength of the pipeline. Aside from that summary, if we move on to section one, I'd like to talk you through the Q1 2018 results of the Extant Group. So if we start with slide 7, and you'll see that we continue to deliver strong income growth, with cash income up 14% year-on-year to $596 million for the last 12 months to March 2018. This growth is being achieved across both our regions and also across our 2 service lines of DP and 3PC. We consciously seek to report cash income given our primary audience on this call are our providers of funding, as it's a cash measure that allows the reader to understand collections on assets owned and also fees and commissions which are earned from our servicing activities. The ongoing reporting of cash metrics remains fundamental to understanding and interpreting the underlying business, so we'll continue to report them as appropriate. On a Q1 2018 versus Q1 2017 basis, we are minded that quarterly performance judged in isolation will always be subject to a degree of volatility or lumpiness given the timing and amount of purchases in the preceding periods. This is a key reason why we've historically and continue to direct attention to metrics on a rolling last 12 months basis. Following on from this, the level of cash income needs to be judged against a particularly strong Q1 2017 comparative, which was itself helped by the timing and mix of assets acquired in the prior period. As such, the 4% growth in cash income quarter on quarter is actually pleasing. Specifically from a 3PC income perspective, we have seen a slight softening between Q1 2017 and Q1 2018. This is the result of a conscious decision where we have realised a few value accretive opportunities to flip portfolios from 3PC into DP, specifically within the DAC region. Overall, the underlying 3PC pipeline for the business remains strong. We've seen a 7% increase in the face value of placements when comparing Q1 2018 to the comparative quarter in the prior year. And we're seeing both the early benefits of some recent material client wins, together with the stickiness of our existing 3PC relationships. If I move forward onto slide 8, and you can see the group's gross profit and cash EBITDA performance on this slide. Now, both measures show a very similar dynamic to our cash income performance, with year-on-year growth outpacing quarter-on-quarter performance. Gross profit is up 13% to £414 million on a last 12-month basis, and cash EBITDA is up 9% to £299 million. We define gross profit as cash income less normalised collection activity costs, i.e. after adjusting for non-recurring costs and exceptional items, and it's obviously net of any exceptional income and excludes lawyer service activity. From a quarterly cash EBITDA performance perspective, we'd note 3 key subtleties. Firstly, the strength of the prior year comparative, given the cash income dynamic that I've just alluded to. Secondly, as shared during the full year results call, 2017 saw an increase in other expenses, principally in the DACH region, as a result of bringing together the activities and platforms of GFKL, TESH and IS in Kassel for the first time, whilst also making investments in the region that we will lever for future growth and margin development. Such investment for the long term is why we've seen cash EBITDA for the DACH region specifically remain flat year on year. Finally, however, and perhaps most critically, our recent strong purchasing success naturally softens cash EBITDA growth in the short term, as we've got a greater element of our front book that's moving through the peak of collection activity costs, but has not yet hit the peak of cash collections. With over £160 million of capital deployed in the last 6 months by the Extant Group, and actually over £260 million for the pro forma group, this is a key aspect not to overlook when undertaking analysis, especially when comparing Q1 performance in isolation. This is why we'd reiterate our preference for the group to be assessed on a rolling last 12 months basis rather than a quarter by quarter view. Turning to slide 9 and the strength and diversification of our purchasing capabilities. On an extant group basis, we continue to deploy capital in excess of our estimated remaining collections replacement rate. We invested around 1.7 times our average replacement rate over the last 12 months. This, together with the accuracy of our ERC forecasts, means we have seen our ERC for the UK and DACH region grow by 18% year on year. Our average ERC replacement rate for the extant group at the end of Q1 2018 was £173 million, but I guess the more appropriate number to look at, given we're an enlarged group, is what the replacement rate is for the pro forma, and that now stands at £228 million. We continue to include a specific disclosure in the appendix of this presentation as to the basis of our replacement rate calculation. We believe transparency on this metric to be important. Our blended gross money multiple across the 2017 and the year-to-date 2018 vintage for the extant group has been 2.0 times, and for the same period for the pro forma group is also coincidentally 2.0 times. Our portfolio acquisitions remain well diversified across sectors and by origination, with just under half of our purchases coming from our multitude of forward flow arrangements. This gives us particular confidence in providing significant coverage of the group's replacement rate. We now move on to section 2 of the presentation. Section 2 allows us to present the performance highlights of the pro forma group. On slide 11, we captured the financial performance of the enlarged group, including the Nordics, on a quarterly and on a last 12-month basis, to help you gain a better appreciation of not only the size and scale, but also the trajectory of the business going forward. We've seen a particularly strong performance with regards to portfolio acquisitions. The last 12 months to March 2018 shows a 43% increase versus the prior year. It's important to note that more than half of this expenditure, some £261 million, has been incurred in the last 6 months. To reiterate, such timing of purchases largely explains why the quarterly comparison sees lower growth than the last 12 months comparative. The 18% growth in the 120-month ERC to £2.8 billion, allied with the forecasting accuracy we've demonstrated so many times before, means we've got great confidence and have great visibility as to the group's future cash flow generation, with over £1 billion of cash forecast to be collected over the next 24 months. And I direct you to page 22 within the appendix for the customary insight as to our collections profile of that ERC. On slide 12, we have again captured both regional performance and the diversification we see across product, region and originating sectors. In terms of regional year-on-year performance, the UK has continued the trends as shared during our full-year results, recording an increase in cash collections following higher portfolio investments. This has led to immediate increase in cash EBITDA and ERC. The year-on-year growth in cash income for the DACH region provides an encouraging backdrop. As referred to at year-end and earlier in the call today, the overall results for the DACH region need to be seen in the context of the in-country consolidation and investment that is taking place. As such, and in the context of the underlying growth, we remain confident that this will, in due course, lead to bottom-line growth and margin development in the region. With regards to the Nordic region, acquisition performance has been running ahead of our original expectations. This will contribute to further growth in both cash income and EBITDA. The right-hand side of the slide provides context to the scale of our enlarged business. With just under a quarter of our cash income coming from capital light 3PC activities, together with a good geographical mix of ERC and a balanced purchasing mix across our sectors. And so on to the final element of our financial update before James concludes today's call. And I'd like to touch upon our funding position, with slide 14 showing our leverage. Pro forma leverage as of March 2018, as measured by net debt to the last 12 months cash EBITDA, stands at 5.2 times. That's unchanged from the pro forma year-end position. It's actually unchanged from Q3, and it's in keeping with both expectations given the quantum of our purchases over the last 6 months and indeed the guidance that we gave during the year-end results call. In Q1 2018, as already mentioned, we've deployed a further $97 million of capital on top of the $163 million of acquisitions we made in Q4 2017. This last 6 months' level of investment has had only a minimal impact on our net debt position as the business utilises the excess cash we generate to fund new purchases. We would continue to guide thinking to a minimal change in our leverage position during the remainder of the first half of 2018, with all things being equal, deleveraging becoming more apparent in the second half of the calendar year. As such, we also reiterate our medium-term net debt leverage guidance of below 4.5 times, driven by our confidence in both continually growing our cash EBITDA, together with the strength of the underlying cash generative nature of the business. As part of our continued efforts to increase our funding flexibility, enhance our capital structure and reduce our cost of funding, I'm also delighted to announce that we have more than doubled the size of our revolving credit facility commitment to €455 million. The enhanced facility provides the group with greater flexibility, reduces reliance on high-yield funding. And actually, the increase in the size of our RCF is commensurate with the growth of our overall business. As you can see on slide 15, we've got a few more facts about the RCF. Our 120-month ERC stood at roughly €1.3 billion at the time we agreed the original RCF of €200 million. In relative terms, the increased size represents about 14% of our 120-month ERC, or circa one times our last 12-month cash EBITDA, and as such, it's a facility which is broadly in line with our peers. The key terms of our increased super senior revolving credit facility remain unchanged. It can be drawn in either sterling or euro and comes with a margin of 3.5% over LIBOR or Euribor. The increased commitment of €455 million is supported by 13 banks. When increasing the RCF, we specifically sought to enlarge and diversify our banking group, and I couldn't be happier to have brought on board 6 new banking partners whilst also increasing the commitment of 3 of our existing long-term supporters. Outside of the RCF, we are mindful of recent comments as to whether we have sufficient technical capacity to refinance some of our existing bonds. For clarity, there are 2 specific debt baskets in our bond documentation that we would direct you to, these specifically being the restricted payments basket and the normalised net income basket, which sometimes is referred to as the build-up basket. These baskets together provide additional flexibility to undertake refinancings of our capital structure if we should choose to utilise them. Currently, they provide for just over €300 million of capacity. And of course, upon any upcoming call date, we would, as you would expect, remain both rational and pragmatic as to the very many options that are available to us.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Colin. So to briefly conclude our presentation on slide 17 from me, in summary, we've continued to deliver strong year-on-year performance. We're encouraged by our recent purchasing success and by the performance of our new Nordic region, which has underscored the strategic rationale for the investment. And overall, I'm extremely pleased about how our integration is progressing. It's very pleasing to see not only our own confidence in our business model, performance trajectory and recent strategic decisions are mirrored by the confidence of others, as evidenced by the agreement of 6 new banks to join our RCF syndicate. We see continued strength in the purchasing pipeline across all 3 regions and will continue to deploy investment capital to to achieve overall growth and to maximise returns for the benefit of the wider group. Our regional diversification, our market-leading presence in these regions, combined with our leadership expertise, together provide the platform for us to continue to deploy capital in a rational, but of course disciplined manner. We see no material change to the outlook we provided a few weeks back for the rest of the year and beyond. Our Nordic acquisition and the funding development just delivered only clearly adds to our level of confidence in what we are clearly unashamedly biased towards being a great business. So we sit here and continue to be enthusiastic and positive about our future prospects. And with that, we'd like to thank you all for listening and ask the operator to open up the lines for further questions you may have.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. I will then speak to you individually, take your full name and introduce you to the call. If you change your mind and you want to withdraw your question, please press star 2. We have the first question coming through. It's from the line of Tom Gibney from Bank of America. Tom, you're now unmuted.
Hi. Your comment around greater portfolio purchases and the front-end costs pushing or holding EBITDA down. Could you maybe give us a sense of how large that is? Because when we look at the 6 monthly purchases, at least haven't increased by an awful lot from 146 to 167. And I can see the mix is more towards the first quarter, but was there maybe also a mix shift towards non-paying or higher front-end cost portfolios within that as well?
Yep, by all means. So I think there's a couple of different points there, Tom. I think 25 million is a relatively significant impact on a quarter-on-quarter basis. There has been a slight mix shift towards more genuinely non-paying rather than portfolios which have an element of paying within them. And equally, you don't see the spike in our actual cost-to-collect ratio, our cost-to-collect absolute number, because there's two different factors which are at play. One is obviously the fact that we are hitting the peak cost curve for the acquisitions that we've made, but then secondly, suppressing that in terms of the reported number is some of the initiatives that we've been working on to reduce our overall cost to collect ratio. So as a result, you don't see a huge spike, but we know that it's having an impact when you look at the margins.
Okay. And then with respect to the, you said there were various costs associated with bringing units together in the DACA division. Could you maybe quantify what the sort of expenses that might be considered one-off in that sense?
Yeah, so if you were to look on our report rather than presentation, you see that other APEX, for example, has increased by around 6 million, if my memory serves, and around 3 million of that is exceptional costs, which relate specifically to DAC in the quarter.
Okay, understood. And then with respect to the gross money multiples, the underwriting gross money multiples, are they, you gave them before for three categories, paying, paying, and DAC. If you could maybe give us a sense of those for the first quarter as well.
I think the best place, Tom, to have a look for the first quarter one is if you refer to the page of the appendix where we've laid out the calculation of our replacement rate. You can see there on a blended basis for the Extant group and for the pro forma group where the 2018 vintage is running. We haven't gone with the three split disclosure we had at the full year, quite simply because we've only moved forward 5 weeks.
Okay, so I mean...
Sorry, Tom, I was just going to say, I think there's a broader point there. We're literally 4.5 weeks after we last spoke, and as a consequence, we've deliberately gone with a light presentation because there really is no change in the business model. You'll see that we also didn't disclose our cash collection versus a static pool, given that it was only 4 weeks since we last disclosed that, and equally, we didn't do a free cash flow waterfall for the same reason.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
The next question comes from the line of Alex Nordhagen from JP Morgan. Alex, you are now unmuted.
Thanks. Hi, guys. Thanks for the update. Just when I think about cash EBITDA going forward from here, we do expect something like, you know, another flat quarter in Q2 and then quite a heavy back end in terms of EBITDA contribution. Can you give us some color on that?
Yeah, I think you've picked up on the right theme, Alex. That clearly the fact that we've made the investments that we have is the fuel for growth in terms of EBITDA. I'd expect that, that cash EBITDA will start to increase both on a quarter-on-quarter basis in Q2, and clearly it will continue to increase in terms of pace during the second half of the year.
Okay, it just seems that, you know, we're, the Q1 number excludes the interim business, right? So I'd expect quite a big jump in Q2 anyway. And then, you know, if we look
I'd probably be a little careful with that, Alex, because I think we've tried to do like-for-like comparisons. So when we show the pro forma in Section 1, that is UK and DAC comparative and actual. And then in Section 2, where we've put the combined group, that's showing what the combined group was on a comparative and actual basis as well.
Okay, got it. Thank you. And then when you on the RCF, can you tell me what, you know, other covenants are in that on that new agreement?
So the covenants are exactly in keeping with what the previous arrangement was. You know, and how I direct you to think about the RCF is it's housekeeping. It's good governance for us in terms of our funding arrangements. We've doubled the size of the business since we originally set it up, and as a consequence, we need to reassess it, make sure that we've got adequate funding for growth. I hate anyone to forget that the business generates more than enough free cash flow to more than cover our replacement investments, but it provides flexibility, attractive coupon relative to what we might otherwise achieve in the high yield space, and I'm confident it will have no impact on rating, and covenants are unchanged.
So, I mean, just so I'm clear, there aren't any, like, breakage rate covenants in there?
No.
It's just, there's leverage?
Yes.
Okay, and then when you said, yeah, you didn't tell us what your collections came in at the forecast, could you disclose that?
They're in keeping with our expectations.
Are your expectations to beat forecasts?
Over the last 12-month basis, we continue to beat our forecast.
Okay. And then, you know, that's only one half of the equation, I think. You know, there's concern amongst investors about IRRs on portfolios. I mean, we get that you beat your forecasted collections most of the time, but how does it look on the cost side of things?
So we continue to generate returns which are more than satisfactory compared to our investment decisions. In terms of costs, I'm aware that there's a lot of speculation within the industry around cost to collect. How we think about cost to collect is there's two different elements of costs. There's the genuine cost to collect, and then there is other OPEX. And if you look at our cost to collect on a normalized basis in terms of cost as a proportion of cash income, they've stayed around 30% pretty consistently. Actually, over the last three quarters, we've seen an improvement to around about 29, I think. And then on the other OPEX side, clearly we have a slightly different dynamic because of the investment that we've been putting through the DAC business to give us a platform for growth thereafter.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, we have the next question coming through the line of Julian Arasopower from Captain Fitzgerald. Julian, you are now unmuted.
Good morning. On the rationale behind the RCF, shall we think about the RCF as a tool that you will use to ramp up your acquisitions, and then once you have both portfolio, you will put the more long-term funding in front of this?
I think that is one way that you could look at it, but clearly I'm very mindful of anyone having the expectation that we're about to utilize the entire RCF and come to the high yield markets to take it out. You know, I think this is a suitable amount of funding to provide us adequate flexibility over the medium term.
Okay. You mentioned that you could borrow an additional 300 million capacity using the two baskets. Is it on in addition to the 455 that you just borrowed?
It's completely different.
It's completely different. Okay, so it could be an addition, yes? Hello? Hello?
Yes, it's completely different.
Okay. Regarding your excess cash flow, I think you used to provide us with a slide, so we don't have it, but I've tried to do it myself at the X10 group, and I've got a negative -7 of free cash flow if I do so. 299 of cash EBITDA, -125 of cash interest expenses, that's LTM, 2 million of cash taxes, and 6 million of capex, and I'm using the 173 million of ERC replacement capex that you're showing on page 21. So is it where you want it to be at this stage?
So clearly, I think there's some frailties at looking at just the extant group's free cash flow. We're part of a broader business now. Nevertheless, without having had the chance to look at your model, I'd suggest your cash interest expense might be a little high.
I think you had -120 in the last presentation, and I think you spent -20 this quarter against -15. So yeah, I think I've got this right, but yeah, we can double check. And on the calculation of the ERC replacement capex on page 21. So if I look at the Extant Group, for instance, so you're telling us this amount, 173, is to replace 469 of expected year one collection at the end of March 18 and 389 at the end of March 17. So that's an average of 429. So what I'm trying to say is this number, 173, is telling us how to replace 429. But you collected 490. So is there not a mismatch between this ERC replacement capex, which is telling us how to replace 429 million of collection, and the 490 million that you did?
I'm so pleased you flagged that, because I think that's a common misconception as to how gross money multiple calculations should be thought of. The roll forward collections are invariably going to be less than the collections in the reported period because of one dynamic. The roll forward capture in our replacement rate calc captures the collections which come from the back book at the reporting date. Therefore, it's capturing the ERC that we need to replace. If you look over a last 12 month basis, there's cash collections which come from the back book, but also the portfolios that you purchase within the period.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So my point is, if you had spent only 173, your ERC will have decreased from March 17 to March 18, because you will have already collected on those on the portfolio you were acquiring from March 17 to March 18, isn't it?
No, I think fundamentally, if you'd spent 173, you would have replaced your ERC.
But ERC will have decreased, no? Because you will have already collected on the portfolio you acquire in April 17. You would have already collected that at the end of March 18.
You would have replaced your ERC, but you wouldn't have replaced your cash collections, because an element of the last 12-month cash collections comes from new purchases. That's why it's a replacement of an ERC calculation.
Okay, I pass it to someone else. Thanks.
Thank you.
We have the next question coming from the line of Julian Dray from Citigroup. Julian, you are now unmuted.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. You mentioned a medium-term target of 4.5 times leverage. Can you give us a little bit more sense on what time frame you're thinking about?
So we define medium-term as around 2 years. We first gave that guidance when we brought the transaction together, which was circa 6 months ago. And we've got confidence that we'll get to that leverage guidance towards the back end of that period.
Understood. Where do you expect deleveraging to come from mostly? EBITDA growth, cash flow?
Yep, EBITDA growth. So I think, you know, it's a question of saying how much do we think the cash EBITDA needs to grow to back solve that 4.5 is one way which you could look at it in your modelling. So given, for example, that our net debt from Q4 to Q1 barely moves, despite all of the investments that we've made, let's just assume that net debt remains broadly static at around $2.1 billion. To get to a 4.5 times net leverage, you'd have to achieve a cash EBITDA of around $468 million, which is around 16% higher than what our last 12 months is. And I'd just direct you to thinking that our growth rate from 16 to 17 is 16%.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have the next question coming through the line of Piotr Ostrowicz from Iron Shield Capital. You are now unmuted. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my questions. Maybe starting with circling back to the question regarding the CapEx spend on the new portfolios and ERC and collection replacements. Maybe it would help to the benefit of all of us on the call if you could walk us through maybe a simplified numerical example, just for us to understand how you managed to replace 490 with 173.
Sorry, Piotr. I think we covered that point respectfully with the slide that we pulled together in terms of slide 21. I think we've tried to address the misconception that you would have to spend more to replace a last 12-month basis by reference to new purchases as well as the extant book. Maybe I'd suggest that just for the purposes of brevity and time today, we've got an accounting teaching which is coming up, which is scheduled for, I think it's the 12th of June in London. We'd be delighted to walk through the more technical sides of that calculation during that call. I think that's probably more appropriate.
Okay, of course. We can take it up offline or in the teaching session. Moving on then, you mentioned that you have moved towards purchasing portfolios which are genuinely non-paying, if I heard you right. What is the rationale for purchasing these portfolios? Were like other partially paying portfolios not available in the market, or you think you're more competitive in non-paying portfolios? I mean, what is the reason for going a bit lower in the quality of the NPLs?
So just at a high level, our overall strategy in terms of what we're buying hasn't changed. So I think what Colin was referring to was in this specific quarter, there was a slight bias towards non-paying. Again, if you look back in all our history, we've been buying, paying, and non-paying consistently quarter on quarter. So I think it was just the fact that this mix specifically in this quarter was. So again, that's nothing abnormal. It's nothing strategic we've done differently. And all in line with sort of historical trends and return levels.
Okay, thank you. And then moving on, it seems like in terms of the third party collections, that's been the second consecutive quarter of decline in this business. Can you please provide more color on what is driving that and what should we expect going forward?
Yeah, so I'll pick that one up. So clearly 3PC is the smaller element of our business. It's worth saying that from the outset for context. Still important, but it is smaller in terms of the overall contribution. Quarter on quarter versus year on year, I've already talked about that dynamic. And clearly, if you look at quarter on quarter, it's impacted by some timing questions again. And I prefer that people would look towards the year on year numbers, given that it's obviously showing growth in cash income. I think it's a 13% increase on a year on year basis. Nevertheless, just to answer the specific question about what's happened quarter on quarter, two different dynamics. First is the fact that we flipped a number of paying 3PC portfolios subsequent to Q1 last year. So there was two particular portfolios in DAC whereby we were able to flip them from 3PC to DP because the economics were better for us over the medium and longer term, which was the right commercial decision for us to make. But that obviously impacted Q1Q comparison. And then secondly, you've also got the dynamic of having a J curve when you bring on board new clients in 3PC. Less pronounced than in terms of debt purchase, but nevertheless it exists. And then within DAC, we brought on three new clients towards the end, or three major new clients towards the end of the calendar year. That obviously has an impact in terms of looking at quarter-on-quarter growth rates. The point which I'd say overall is, go back to the one of the soundbites we gave during the narrative, the face value of handovers is actually up 7% quarter on quarter, and that gives us confidence as to the trajectory of the business going forward.
Right. Just to point out, I'm actually looking at year on year in your reports. That was the decline I was referring to, not necessarily quarter on quarter, but nevertheless, thank you for this color. And on the capital structure point, several times we have discussed the potential refinancing through securitization financing. Have you had any further thoughts on that?
Sorry, I don't want to be dogmatic on the 3PC point, but I'm looking on slide 7, and I think the cash income does grow by 13% on a last 12-month March 17 to March 18. So maybe it's worth us taking offline if you're seeing a different number, but that's certainly the last 12-month trend I see on 3PC. So apologies, I'm not trying to be dogmatic. I think in terms of your second point around our capital structure, you'd expect me to come with the politician's answer, which I'm going to give, which is we continue to be aware of when call options start to fall away, costs, we continue to be mindful of the optionality which is available to us, and you'd expect us to be rational and reasoned in order to achieve all of our funding objectives.
Sure, on the 3PC, I was referring to the report on page 5, but we can take it offline. Surely, and very lastly, on the IRRs, you mentioned that the IRRs are satisfactory, but do you see any trend in the IRRs, or broadly flat, or moving up or down?
So I think, as I just sort of referred to in before, that overall, as I said, I think strategically, where we're in deploying capital is in line with how we have done before, and from a returns perspective, we're still able to invest at similar returns to what we've done in the past. So from that basis, I believe everything to be consistent.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Helen Rodriguez from CreditSight. Helen, you're now unmuted.
Hi, thanks very much for the questions. Can I ask your 163 in the fourth quarter and 91 in this quarter? Can you give us a bit of colour on the types of stuff that you're buying? I think I saw something in the presentation, it was more Nordics. Secured, unsecured, just anything unusual about it, just to get a flavour of what it is that you're bringing in now.
Yeah, so there's nothing unusual about it. It's very much in keeping with what we've purchased before. As James has already said, we're predominantly a non-paying purchaser. Sometimes we purchase portfolios which have an element of paying, but that doesn't mean performing. We're not purchasing any secured. And if you think about the $97 million which we invested in Q1, in keeping with the relative size of our different regions, the UK invested $49 million, and then there was a $24 million investment in DAC and $24 million in the Nordics.
Okay. And can I ask, this is just a background question. When you're, you break it up by financial services and retail and telecom, is there effectively any difference in the model that you use for those and, how it all works, or is it just, the same underlying customer kind of thing?
So I guess our principle in terms of how we engage with customers clearly is the same, to set up long-term affordable repayment plans in a very realistic way. So that part of it is obviously very similar. But the actual operating platforms and how we go about things like scoring and ranking of our resources, all of that is extremely different. And, clearly a low-balance account, you have to be much more cautious in terms of deploying cost because obviously it affects very much more sensitively sort of NPV ratios at account levels, for instance. So that's where a lot of skill in terms of using your data, your automation, and different skills within your operating platforms really do come to bear.
And does each of those, do they have their own pricing curve? So you might, get pressure into, financial services, but actually retail storming. Does it work like that, or is it all more or less one curve in terms of competitive intensity?
No, it's much, much more dynamic than that and scientific than that, clearly. So, we can, even look down at individual consumer attributes. And this is where, I guess, having extremely high crossover of known outcomes with consumers we've worked with before across all of our three regions gives us a significant advantage. So we literally will look at individual attributes as to what, like I said, is realistic and affordable for them at individual level. And also we will clearly look at it in terms of the different cash profiles of portfolio attributes, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these things feature as key dynamics, which obviously is why having both a full diversification across different sectors, different types of portfolios, clients and consumers gives us a massive advantage when we're pricing portfolios.
And I think the other thing which I'd add to that, Helen, is clearly I can't make a comment on anyone else's business model, but I can make a comment on the pricing sophistication which exists within our business. And if I just take the UK alone, it's not just all of the facets that James says, but when you've purchased over 1,000 individual portfolios, you've got 1,000 individual portfolios worth of collection experience. That data asset is hugely important in terms of pricing accuracy and also forecasting accuracy with regards to ERC.
Yeah, and if you go back to our sort of investment into the Nordics, this is one of our things that we were very excited about, was the fact that clearly they have a lot of history,
yep,
and a lot of diversity across all the different countries, which obviously allows us to be able to understand, you know, our pricing decisions with far more confidence.
Which may probably be different to some of the competitor set.
Cool, great. Thank you very much.
The last question comes from the line of Julian Arasol-Bauer. Julian, you are now unmuted.
Yes, on the ERC page 9, so increased by 321 million to 2.103. How much was the revaluation and the impact from the foreign exchange, please? In the ERC growth.
Sorry, Julian, we're just frantically scrambling around different pages here. Is that page 9 of the presentation?
Yeah, page 9 of the presentation, exactly. We chose the increase in the 120 month ERC, so from 1.782 to 2.103, so increased by 321, and I was wondering how much was the increase due to revaluation and foreign exchanges?
Yeah, so that's not going to be a simple question to answer because of the difference between extant book and the enlarged group.
So I think it's for extant group, this one, yeah? This one is for extant only.
Extant group, then that's much easier to answer. So it's the revaluation was around 14.3 million. 14.3, which is a net number. And
but
then you obviously have to then gross that up in order to get to what the ERC equivalent would be.
Yeah, but the 14, I think the 14 is only for the first quarter, and the comparison is over the last 12 months.
You're right.
I guess if it helps, Julian, maybe one way that I would picture that, and we have taken out, again, for the brevity, the natural walk we put on the ERC. But the way to picture it is we bought 293 million on the extant group in the last 12 months. That's been at a blended 2x gross money multiple.
Yep.
So we've put on book, call it 600 million of new ERC. In that period, we've also then collected, if unless my math is mistaken, we've some 490 million. So that gives you the net movement on what you've collected and what you've invested. And then your figure that completes the gap, so to speak, will be your natural roll forward. It will then be the revaluation and the move up or the move down in our collections estimates. And also, don't forget, that we'll have a degree of FX as well, given that the DAC numbers will be converted across into pounds. But that's the way I'd try and picture and close off that walk.
Yeah, no, but you don't have this number, Andy.
You've called out, obviously, for the full year, we include that walk. That was in the appendix. Again, for the brevity, we haven't dropped that walk in this time, okay. But it would be very much pictured how I've just talked you through.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
There are no further questions in the queue.
Okay. Well, always good to have the debate. Always good to field all of the questions. We wanted to make sure that we give adequate opportunity to everyone to interact. I think our next interaction is likely to be the accounting teaching, which we're super excited to deliver once again. And there'll be further details about that on our website in order for people to be able to express their interest and participation. So with that, thanks once again from a sunny Leeds and have a brilliant weekend. Many thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your handsets. House, please stay connected.